Our human lives are so they're to be honored, and every human life is to be honored, and that's what this story is about. And the story is about angels, but we should point out that as soon as we say angels, we all get pictures of Hallmark angels, you know, like with the wings and the halos and the harps, and it's all these things are as metaphorical as the word God is. You know, it's they're meant to represent something that is real, but something which could never be contained in the myth that carries that truth. It could, you know, never. So, you know, angels are symbolic. The wings are symbolic of inspiration and transcendence, and the halo is symbolic of light and Noor, and the harp is symbolic of perhaps harmony, or, you know, and praise, which is the world of the angels. And, you know, we've talked a lot, as we should, about our collective self-delusion by using the word God, the name God. It's all the same thing, that we use these signposts, which mean more to some people than others, which mean this to one person, this to another person. And this is all in preface of saying we're going to talk about angels and God in this story. So I just thought I'd say that, and also preface that we're probably going to be talking about that a fair amount in this whole series, and that it's all part of an agreed upon, very purposeful self-delusion, as if we could actually say what we're saying. God couldn't. So it's an agreed upon, I hope it's agreed upon, because we are going to say prayers that say the word God. So it's an agreed upon concept that we all know is fiction, except for the most important part, which is the ultimate truth. Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty important part.
Yeah, that's important part.
That's an important part. So one day God called his angels, or her angels, or its angels. I'm saying it more often than anything else these days. Its angels in front of it, and said, I want you to bow down before the humans. And the angels, 2 of 1, said, are you joking? Are you kidding us? Those creatures? The ones who destroy everything that you create? The ones that destroy each other? The ones that actually take life? How could you ask us to bow down to these things? I mean, the worst thing of all is they take others' lives in your name. That's how bad they are. All of them were just aghast at this. But of course, the angel's job is to praise God and to not ask questions. So most of them said, well, you're asking us to do this, so we'll do this. But there was one particular angel, perhaps from the branch of the family that brought Beelzebub, the darker side of the angelic family. And that angel said to God, you know, you are the all-omnipotent, all-omniscient, you are everything, my Lord. But I can't bring myself to do what you're asking. I can't do it. This was the tempestuous, oppositional child angel.
Just, and I won't.
I'm not going to do it.
Hold my breath.
I'm not going to do it. And, you know, God responded as a dear mother would respond, saying, you know you don't understand, but really, you should do what I'm asking you to do. You really should. Still, the angel said, I can't. I cannot bow down to that. Well, anybody know what the next thing is in the story? I know Rahima does because she was there. Anybody guess what the next thing is in the story? That particular angel wakes up in a human body. In a male human body. And the angel doesn't know where it is. Doesn't know what a human body even feels like. And it's under an apple tree. Wakes up under this apple tree completely shocked. And pretty soon it realizes what's happened and then goes, oh, no, anything but that. I take it all back. But, you know, when things go in a certain direction,
There they go.
So there he is, and he's under the apple tree trying to make head or tail of the human body and what he's doing in it. And night comes, and he feels this sensation he's never felt before, which is cold. And he sees darkness. He's never seen that before. He doesn't know what darkness is. And the next day, the sun comes out. He's never seen sun before. Everything is new, and he feels warmth. And it's like, oh, this is... Every sensation is new. And then he gets a strange sensation in his stomach, and he doesn't know what it is. He doesn't know what to call it, but he sees these apples that are falling from the tree, so he picks one up and starts to bite it and chew it, and he realizes that satisfies that sensation that he had, which was hunger. And he actually finds out that he likes the taste of apples very much. That's very good thing. So he eats a few of those. Well, he's there in the apple tree, under the apple tree, and along comes... Certainly you can guess this. A very young, beautiful maiden. And they have this great chemistry right away. You know, a really powerful attraction to each other. And he starts kind of speaking the way most love-struck young men speak, kind of blathering away really nonsensically. Oh, I had these things and I ate them and it felt very good. And so she explains in her very savvy way, you know, what an apple is. And, well, if you like these apples, you can come to my house and I'll feed you some apple pie. Mm. He goes, okay, you know. So off they go to her house for apple pie. And she gets the apple pie out and they're about to sit down and eat it. And he's looking at it and goes, oh, I really want that. And she says, no, first of all, we have to give thanks. We have to say a prayer. And so he says, why? And she said, well, because we have to give thanks to the one who gave us these apples and everything that went into this pie. This is something that we have to be remembering all the time. So the angel who had become a man said, okay. And they prayed together, and it wasn't the way that he was used to praying, because angels pray in angelic ways, and human beings pray in their way, but he thought it was very cool, you know, very interesting, and very neat. And
he wanted the apple pies.
And he wanted the apple pies, so he had to say grace. And so after the prayer, of course, they consumed the apple pie, and they got to talking, and they got to know each other, and, you know, one thing led to another. And eventually... they became a couple, and they became husband and wife, and they started a business. You know what the business was? Apple orchard. You know, it was an apple orchard. They got all these trees going, and they started an apple orchard, and everything was beautiful. Everything was so great. They're in love, and they had a child come along, and the child was beautiful, and you know, and the wife kept on saying, "Don't get too busy to pray. We have to stop and pray and give thanks." Because he was getting really busy with his business. Mm-hmm. And when the child came along, he just wanted to dance and play with the child all day long. And the wife said, you know, it's good that you're appreciating this, but you've got to stop and give thanks once in a while. You've got to stop and say the prayers. And, you know, he said, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, we should do that, we should do that. And he would do it, but he was beginning to forget. He was beginning to get into the human condition just a little bit too much. And he was really ambitious. The apple orchard was just taking off. Pretty soon, he was so busy working 7 days a week that he would barely stop. And still, his wife would say, you have to stop and say a prayer once in a while because we have to give thanks to God. And so he would do that. Well, this went on very beautifully for a couple of years. But then one year, the next year after that, a plague came. And the plague wiped out everything, wiped out the whole apple orchard. There was no apples. So the business went right down the tubes. They had enough to struggle through the winter, but it was very, very hard. And still the wife said, let's give thanks. And he was going in his mind, well, what are we giving thanks for? This is like, we have nothing now. You know, we're losing everything. But still they gave thanks. And things went worse. Their child, their firstborn child, died. And even amidst her grief, the wife said, we still have to praise. We still have to give thanks. And it just kept on getting worse and worse and worse. They lost everything. They lost their house. Another child died. And pretty soon, the husband, who used to be the angel, was so bitter and distressed that he could barely bring himself to join his wife in the prayers. In fact, every time she said, "Let's say a prayer," it would start to annoy him. He just said, "Why are we doing this? There is no God. It's just your imagination. Just your imagination." At that moment, he left this life. And he was taken back. And he found himself eventually back in the angelic body, in front of God. And there he was in front of God, and he was very terrified, very remorseful, chagrined, and wanting forgiveness so much. Because he finally remembered, of course. So God said, "Now do you understand? Now do you understand why I asked you to bow down before them?" And the angel said, "Yes, I do understand now." So God said, "Well, I want you to tell all the other angels." And so the angels were all called. And the angel who had visited a human life looked at them and said, "My brethren, it is proper that you bow down before these human beings. We, who are created as angels, it's easy for us to praise, because that's what we're made for. These human beings, they just struggle. They have such complex and difficult lives, and still they praise the one who made them. And that praise is the most holy and sacred praise that there can be."